Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Decent Christian Talk, episode number 113. I'm Gabe Jones.
I'm Josiah.
And we are a show by the fans.
For the fans.
And we've got a great show for you today. I am so happy to have this guy on today. It's Aaron Smith. And if you don't know who Aaron Smith is, I'm about to tell you who he is.
He's not the defensive lineman for the Steelers.
He's not. Although Aaron Smith is pretty awesome too. Aaron Smith was the drummer for a band called The 77s. And he was also a drummer for a group called The Temptations. And he also played drums for Charlie Peacock. But his probably biggest claim to fame was playing drums in a band called, well, a ragamuffin band for Rich Mullins. And he's played drums for various other artists over the years, such as Kevin Max. And, I mean, you can just go to his Wikipedia page. Michael W. Smith, Margaret Becker. I mean, you can just go down the list. There's a lot of artists that he has played with over the years.
He's one of those guys that, because he's a drummer, you might not know his name. But he's been in a lot.
Yeah, you know, good drummers are hard to find. So when you find a good drummer, you put them on speed dial.
Oh yeah,
and so before we get into that, let's talk about our Patreon page. It's patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. For as low as $1 a month, you can support our show. Literally, without your support, we could not do the show. If you hadn't noticed, we had a little bit of a gap in shows, and that's because, well, our computer died. Finally.
It did after I don't know,
but
how many years?
Yes, it's been at least a decade. So without your support, we literally couldn't do the show. We were able to upgrade and get another computer, and that's because of your support, and we thank you for that. And it really does mean a lot. We're not just saying that. So that's proof that your support is helping us, and that does mean a lot. So if you want to join our team for as low as $1 a month, it's literally a gulp of Starbucks coffee.
A gulp.
Easy for me to say.
Happy is a yuppie word.
Yes. But as low as $1 a month, you can join our team. So, getting back to Aaron Smith,
what can they get with that bonus episode this week?
Oh, that's a good point. Our latest bonus episode covers an album that just turned 20 years old, and that is "Loud and Clear" by the OC Supertones.
Very, very good. Very good song. The whole album's good, but yes. There's a couple songs on there that I still listen to.
Yes, and you'll want to check that out. So yeah, Aaron Smith. You know, this time of year, it would be a mistake if I didn't talk about Rich Mullins before we head into the show. Rich Mullins, he is an artist that's just kind of stood the test of time, and he's somebody that I grew up listening to, and this time of year is kind of the anniversary of his leaving us. And so this time of year, I always kind of go back and not only listen to his songs, but I also try to go on YouTube and find some old clips, and especially some of like his concert footage that I really like to listen to. And it's just, he was a special guy, and you know, there is a stage presence that he had that's just, it's just, you can't explain it. You really can't.
He is a movie character, the eccentric kind of character that, I don't know, you would think of Robin Williams playing, kind of like just oddball, off the wall. You listen to a song like Awesome God and you think, this guy has, I don't want to misspeak here or make you understand incorrectly. He's not your cookie cutter kind of person. As you'll hear in the episode, if you were to go with Rich Mullins to serve some homeless people under a bridge, you might lose him among them just based on how he dressed and just other things like that. So I think it's very peculiar kind of person, but very brilliant kind of person at the same time. So yeah. I know a tradition at our house is listening to It's Time to Get Up, It's Christmas Morning, that song every Christmas morning. So he's a very special person in the annals of Christian music history.
Yeah, and at least once a year on this show, I've tried to get someone that's interacted with him and just hear some stories about Rich and, I don't know, trying to keep his legacy alive, I guess. So without further ado, here is our interview with Aaron Smith.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
Welcome to Truth Custom.
So, yeah, so my history with you basically has been running into you at some various Kevin Max shows over the years.
Okay.
And I've always appreciated your work. I've seen you play live as early as with Rich Mullins. And I know you played with Charlie Peacock and the Temptations and the 77, so you've got a really nice resume, if you will. But I wanted to talk a little bit specifically about Rich Mullins because we just had the anniversary of his passing. Working with all those artists, those are cream of the crop there, if you will. But what was unique about being with Rich Mullins and going down the road with him compared to everybody else?
Well, Rich toured very economically when he, you know, like most people on Rich's level would have had a tour bus and or two and that sort of thing, and you know, those kind of accommodations. But man, when we were on the road, I think we had up to 4 or 5 different vehicles on the road, from vans to Rich's Jeep, cars, and of course the truck with it that the gear went into. And you know, it's just like we knew where we had to go, and we knew what time we had to be there. And so everybody left on their own, depending on what vehicle you were riding in. And hopefully you got to where you were supposed to be at the designated time. Sometimes that didn't always work because people would go sightseeing in some small little town and, you know, forget about the time. Or, you know, there somebody else would go take another route, and there would be like road work, and that would hold them up, you know. So it was like that, and it was always, you know, it was always a sigh of relief once everybody got to the gig, got to sound check. It was like, oh yeah, we made it again, and. You know, he was just so easygoing, you know. None of that stuff bothered him, you know. It was just like, don't worry about it, you know. he was very kind. He taught very little, and you know, if you were in his band, man, you were, that was like a special honor, because he was kind of picky.
That's a cool story. There's always those legendary stories of him like showing up to venues and not having any shoes on, and you know, just being very generous with the resources he had. What kind of things like that did you learn from him, or did his perspective kind of rub off on you in any way?
Let's see. I don't know. He kind of surprised me, you know, when I first met him, because, you know, I had never met him before. And, you know, you look at his album covers, you know, they were all glossy, and he was this handsome guy with these great clothes on and stuff like that, you know. And so my first time meeting him, he shows up with probably barefoot, and he had these jeans on that had holes all over them, and this big t-shirt, and, you know, and he looked like he had just gotten out of bed. And I figured, well, maybe he did just get out of bed, but then he looked like that all the time. And so what I'd learned from him is that, based on that, is that you don't have, appearances don't always tell the truth. You know, you never know, you know, and so you should take everybody, you know, as they come to you, and greet, and try to treat everybody the same way, and don't judge them, their outward appearance, and things like that, you know, because here was Rich Mullins, you know, he could have been a hobo, you know, if somebody, he could have walked out of town in any city and been declared a hobo, if you just look at him. Mm-hmm. You know, yep. Like, but he's brilliant, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah,
that's a lesson.
That's amazing. And maybe this is an unfair question, and it's really hard, but what space do you think he would be in if he were still alive today? And just knowing that how much he was compassionate about low-income people, and, you know, his heart for Native Americans, where do you think he would be today?
You know, that's hard to say. I definitely believe he would be on the reservation, for sure.
Yeah.
Whether he would still, well, in during COVID-19, he wouldn't be touring. So I think he'd just, right now, he'd probably just be on the reservation, you know, just doing his thing. I'm pretty sure he would have worked and toured and done concerts in some form or fashion up to the COVID-19 experience. But, you know, probably a lot of solo piano speaking dates, that sort of thing. I don't know. It's hard to say if he would have gone on making records and stuff like that. The Jesus record would have been different. Because, you know, Rick Elias produced that, and Rick's production values and that sort of thing were a little bit different from Rich's. You know, Rich was even very plain and simple when it came down to that. You know, I don't think Rich would have ever suggested going to London and recording the London Philharmonic or anything like that, you know.
That album is so fun, and every time around this time of year, I always go back and listen to it. Do you ever do that? Do you ever go back and listen to some of that, and just close? I mean, I just close my eyes, and I just kind of go back. It's so fun, and his music just seems timeless.
Yeah. We watched, my wife and I watched the Live from Studio A broadcast. Mm. Did you ever see that?
Yeah, I just saw some of it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we watched it the other night. It's kind of hilarious to me because I remember being there. I remember getting there. It was a studio at, I think it was St. Mary's College or something on that campus. It was right across the street from Notre Dame. And it was winter time. And we had all arrived there in our, in our, in the way that we arrived to gigs. And, but this was a television show. So it was like imperative that we all get there at the same time to set up, figure out how we're going to set up, sound check and all that sort of stuff. And then we get there and we find out what they want us to do. They actually want to do two different segments, which why you have part one and part two. And so part one, I think it's pretty good. Part two is like us going, what are we going to do for part two? I don't know. And then we do these, how do you do a song? You know, if you got a song, you know, I think it was on part two, the best part of that was Rick singing Man of No Reputation for one of the first times. That's why he sang it alone, because we didn't know it, you know. And the rest of it is kind of crazy, you know. And you know, if you watch part two, there's a lot of, like, moving around, you know, a lot of dead air, you know, and people cracking jokes and stuff like that, which we always thought was going to be edited out, you know, and they were going to put it together. But I don't know if they ever did that. So what you get with part two is this ragtag, scraggly sort of production, you know. And I was like tickled. Because we did cups. We did cups. And we did it like two or three times. Because the first time wasn't good enough. And Rich said, oh, no, let's do that again. And we did it again. And I think we did it again. And they used all, they broadcast the whole thing, you know. I mean, it was kind of funny, but, you know, in our thinking at the time, we thought it was going to be edited, and, you know, it wasn't.
Yeah, I actually, the Man of No Reputation, I remember Rich getting up at the end and saying that that was, like, his favorite song at the time, and, yeah, that's a fun story. I didn't know the background of that.
He was a man of no reputation. By the wise considered a fool, when he spoke about faith and forgiveness, in a time when the strongest storms rule. But this man of no reputation loved us all with relentless affection. When he loves all us poor in spirit, come as you are to the man of no reputation.
Yeah.
So with, you know, just thinking about where Rich would be today, where do you find yourself these days with, you know, you've been in, you know, like the Christian music world your whole life, and it looks a lot different these days, and it's, you know, the evangelical church has shaped the way it has, where do you, especially as a black man in today's world, where do you find yourself just kind of watching from your perspective?
Well, you know, funny thing about Christian music now, it's used to just contemporary Christian music. Now it's broken up in all these things. You got gospel, you got black gospel, and then you got like what I would call CCM, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just, from what I see, from where I sit, it's a lot more polarized, I guess that's the right word. Or separate, you know?
Yeah.
These genres have been separated, and you got one genre that's mainly white artists, one that's mainly black artists, that sort of thing, you know? And it's not much mingling. I don't see much mingling there. There wasn't that much mingling when I was here, when I first came here and I was in it. I think when I moved here, there were four black musicians I knew of that were part of the CCM community, like doing gigs and touring and doing studio work. That was me, Tommy Sims, Jackie Street, and, wow, can't think of his name. It's another drummer. I see his face, but I can't think of his name. But anyway, he'll come to me. He played with Adam Again. You know him? Remember that group, Adam Again?
Yeah, I do. I'll have to look for that real quick. But
yeah. And I don't know. Things are kind of different now, you know. I mean, Toby Mac. If you look at Toby's band, man, it's the UN. I mean, it's very universal. But you know, you wouldn't expect any less from Toby, you know.
Right.
Because you know he's always been that way, and his philosophy on race and that sort of thing has always been very clear, and he's always been very inclusive. And I really admire Toby Mac for what he's done and in his consistency. You know, he's been a consistent Christian musician. I would even go as far as to say, from what I know of Toby, he's a consistent Christian. He's probably one of the most consistent Christians I know.
Why do you see that as rare? I mean, from my perspective, it looks to be rare. Just that diversity and that racial integration. Why do you think that even in 2020 is still hard to find in Christian music?
I don't know. You know, that's a good question. I don't know. You know, it's like, well, you know, I'm just going to say this. Here in Nashville, I think it's believed that black musicians and white musicians all bring something different to the table. So, for instance, look around and see how many black musicians you see playing country music. Because it's kind of unspoken, but I think the philosophy is that our feelings are different. The way we feel music, the way we feel a groove is different. And so it wouldn't be good here. It'd be better suited over here. that sort of thing.
It's hard to believe that we're still like segregating that even in 2020. Speaking of like just the church, even away from music, I think it still has a way to go when it comes to reconciliating just a lot of the, maybe not past, but especially like the present, people not understanding some of the racial, you know, the difference between white and black, and some people just not understanding that. What do you think are some steps that the church needs to take when it comes to reconciliation?
Well,
I know that's a really big question.
That's a huge question. One step that church should take is in the recognition that in the 1800s, and when slavery was at its peak here in the United States in late 1850s, early 1865, 60s, that sort of, you know, black people couldn't worship with white people, you know, had to go under a tree somewhere out in the field if the slave owner permitted it, you know. So there's always been this division, and it was set up by the white church, you know, and it still exists today, and it just continues to keep going. I remember there was a time during the Martin Luther King days when churches were apologizing and you know, stepping forward and actually saying, well, yeah, we are part of the problem and we want to change that. I don't see that anymore. You know, I play at churches, and I've been a member of a church that's most of the churches the one church I was a member of for like 16 years here, and it was I toured with Michael Card for about a year, and my roommate was the merch guy. And talk about being the only black person around. It was like, and one day I ran into him. This is like a couple of years after tours over and stuff like that, and I had finally moved here. I ran into him and his family at Costco, and he asked me what church I was going to, and I told him I was going to a Calvary Chapel here in Franklin, but we had just gone to church that morning, and one of the guys had announced that the pastor had resigned and he wouldn't be there that morning or any other morning. And so I said, well, right now I don't think I'm going to any church. So he invited me to his church. So I said, okay. And he said, they had a men's group. They did this thing called Theology for Breakfast every Thursday morning at 6 o'clock. And it was great. But before I committed to the church, I went to the Theology for Breakfast things for about a month. Got to know the guys. And the thing that, you know, I hope this sounds right, but sounds all right. But the thing for me here in Nashville in church is that my celebrity in contemporary Christian music kind of opens doors for me or puts out a welcome mat for me that maybe any other black person wouldn't get. Hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
That makes sense?
Sure.
And so since since that celebrity is generally amongst white Christians, like I could go to a black church here and be, and nobody would, you know, I'd just be one of the guys, yeah. You know. But, you know, I went to this theology for breakfast thing, and one the youth pastor was a big 77s fan, you know. And so, you know, then everybody knows I'm in the 77s, and, you know, and then, so, but I love the guys. I love the pastor. The pastor was like, he's still one of my best friends, although he's not pastoring there anymore. And so what he said was, he told me it was, that he had heard the music and blah, he said, you know, you probably won't be playing drums here. And I said, well, that's not why I'm coming here, is to play drums. He said, okay, good. The congregation was really old. I mean, it's like 70s and up, you know? And after a couple of months, I played drums there because they did have a kid that was playing drums, but sometimes he played hand drums, and sometimes he brought in a kid, but it was maybe once a month or something. So I started playing, and then I played more and more and more, and then 16 years later, you know, I'm playing almost every Sunday, and they finally bought a drum kit in year 14. You know, so all those years, I'm crating my drums to church every Sunday, and you know, it becomes a thing. So I forgot, what was the question?
just what are some steps that we can take towards racial reconciliation within the church?
Yeah. You know, another thing that I think separates us is our theology, you know, Reformed or Arminian, and our denominations, Presbyterian, Baptist, Southern Baptist, that sort of thing. And it's culture, especially Southern culture. It's ongoing. It gets passed on from generation to generation to generation. And some of the things, you know, there has to be some acknowledgement of that. You know, that, well, you have to want to acknowledge it, and then you have to acknowledge it and let the pieces fall where they may. Because, you know, that church I was a member of for 16 years never from the pulpit spoke about social justice or about any sort of things that were going on in society, you know? And I kind of think, I didn't think that then, but I think this now, that there was probably lost some membership had that stuff been expounded from the pulpit, you know. And that's why, you know, being at this church, I would see black families come in who would never come back. You know, and there was an Indian family that was there. They're probably still there. There was me. And there's another black guy who would bring his sons. He was divorced, and he would bring his sons to church when he had custody that weekend. And so that was it for color. So I just think that, you know, if you say too much, pastors walk a very thin line, you know, and you know, just like churches refusing to not have attendance during the COVID thing, you know, you got to believe some of that is financial, you know, because you don't come to church, you can't take a collection. And, you know, churches have bills too. You know, they got to pay for their property, most of them. And they got staff they have to pay for and blah, blah, blah. And when you see a guy like John MacArthur defy the state government and has church, you know, you got to go, wait a minute, you know, because he has done a commentary in Romans, you know, and spoke about obeying the authorities, because God has placed them over you in authority, given them authority to govern over you and that sort of thing. And then to have him like backtrack like that, it's like, wow, that's got to be a money thing.
Right. I think one of the things that I have noticed that has been helpful for me is it is important to speak out on social injustice, but there also needs to be a time where I be quiet and I listen, and I don't try to, you know, I don't need to be right. I don't need to be heard. I need to be quiet and I need to listen. And I think that's also missing from the culture today. Is that something that you've noticed?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's been missing for a long time. Listening to others and that sort of thing, which is how we didn't all of a sudden get here.
Yeah,
you know, it's been going.
You know, you kind of think about Jesus preaching a sermon on the mountain, and you just kind of wonder what that would be like today, if people trying to interrupt them and interject and what. Blessed are the poor. Why not blessed for all people? You know.
Right. So where does that leave me? I'm not poor.
Yeah.
Am I not blessed?
Right. Anyway, man, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me. I've always looked up to you, and I've always wanted to chat with you, and this really does mean a lot. And yeah, thank you so much. That was our interview with Aaron Smith. Really like to thank Aaron. I've always wanted to have him on the show. He's one of those guys that has had a lot of experience in the music industry over the years. His resume is, I mean, it's stacked. I mean, it's pretty impressive. And I also wanted to get his take, you know, his perspective as a black man this year, you know, with everything that's happened in 2020. You know, he's somebody that I really wanted to hear from, and, you know, I respect his opinion, and, I'm always wanting to listen to people's perspectives. So I thought that was important to ask him about, and, you know, it's not an easy subject to talk about. It's not, but it's important. It's important to understand where people are coming from, and I thought it was important to hear from him on that as well.
It's important to listen, and especially like you said, from a guy, like we said before, maybe not the Actor of the Year award, but Best Supporting Role. He's that guy in a lot of different movies. If you make that correlation to movies to music, so he's been supporting a lot of very famous people, and he's been, I mean, the drumline of a lot of famous songs.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm so glad that we got to hear from him. Yeah. And you know, this show, we talk about music a lot. A lot of the music that we grew up on, I mean, we created this brand, this DCT brand, based on our love for DC Talk growing up. They kind of, so we've kind of been, you know, over the years, we've had artists and bands that have the lyrical content that makes you think and makes you ponder and makes you listen and makes you question, you know. And, you know, DC Talk did that back in the 90s. There's a lot of artists that we have had on the show that's done that over the last several years. And it's important to do that. It's important to be introspective and listen.
Yes. Listening is best.
And we would like to thank you guys for listening to our show. And you can help support our show through patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. Again, we're going to be talking about Loud and Clear by the OC Supertones.
One of the... I don't know if it's their most iconic album.
No.
I wouldn't say that. But I would say it's a fantastic album.
It might be top three or four. We'll say that much.
Okay.
Yeah, you can check that out exclusively on Patreon for as low as $1 a month. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and various other places.
Yeah,
YouTube.
If you have it, we are there.
Just Google Decent Christian Talk Podcast. You'll find us probably. We're also on Instagram, DC Talk Podcast. We are on Twitter, DC Talk Act 2. And we have a website, Decent Christian Talk. You can also find us on Facebook, Decent Christian Talk, and Decent Christian Talk podcast discussion page. Yeah, I can't believe it's like the show, it comes out like the end of October, maybe even November. I don't know. It's fall and Christmas is coming. Thanksgiving is coming. It's weird.
Fall back is coming.
Let's not talk about that.
You get the extra hour of sleep. Everybody waits all year for it.
That might be the rant of the bonus episode.
Okay, fine.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. It means so much that you listen. And you guys have a great day. We'll catch you next time.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.